Hi everyone, welcome to the Precious Pioneer audio experience. Kindness never goes out of style. Let's do something great today. Hello.
Hey, Precious.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Nice to finally meet you.
Same to you as well.
Yeah, how are you doing lately?
I'm doing okay, you know, keeping busy for sure.
yeah, cool, great. So Precious, I'm very curious to know your story about how you became a sustainable chef.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what is a sustainable chef?
So basically I would say that it's a chef who cares about where food is sourced and values using all of the ingredients. So nothing goes to minimize food waste and caring about not only about the dish and the recipe, but also caring about the nutritional impact of the person who's eating it. And I think that's what I would consider it. I guess a modern way to say it would be like anyone who's for like farm to table, you know, like sourcing local ingredients, you know.
Right. Did you start it as a chef and then you became more towards the green initiative, or has it always been this type of chef, the sustainable one?
I think it's like you said, like I was really passionate about food and culinary. I was actually mostly fascinated with pastry, so desserts and chocolates and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I eventually really loved the culinary side of it. But, you know, as problems start to arise and I studied more about food and the culture and, you know, how obesity rates are rising and the climate crisis and all of these other major issues regarding our agriculture and the health of, you know, our people in the world, you know, I thought that food is such a beautiful element. And as a chef, it's our job to prepare dishes, you know, so just thinking about how you could help other people, but then also cook great food. You know, I think that's something what really interested me.
Right. Cool. Yeah. Do you mind sharing how did you start with all of this? When was the first time that you find out that you wanted to dedicate your life to become a chef?
It's kind of funny because it's definitely changed and evolved over time. When I was younger, when people asked you like, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, I said that I wanted to work at Red Lobster, which is really funny. It's like a fast food almost. And I think as I grew older, I wanted to work towards that. And so I worked at all kinds of different restaurants and I went to college to study restaurant management. And I grew up watching Food Network and TLC, where there's a show called Cake Boss, where they build these cakes that are beautiful, like, but they're cars or just like random, like really cool objects, you know, out of cake. And I'm like, you know what, that sounds pretty cool. And so I eventually just learned different aspects of pastry. And I don't know, I think the more I learned about food as a whole is when I really started to love the occupation of, or the career of becoming a chef, you know, because I think food is so much more than what it seems to be on the surface. And I think sometimes people take it for granted because it's just part of our lives, you know, but there's so much to it.
Yeah. Did you ever doubt yourself about becoming a chef and you tried to find a different type of career? What was like the biggest challenge when you were trying to become a chef?
I think the biggest challenge is that it wasn't until fairly recently that becoming a chef it became a job worth talking about. You know, like the whole idea of celebrity chef or being a cook as being seen as such a novelty, that's only happened until fairly recently, you know, because poor people were chefs, you know, like maids were chefs, you know, so this concept is kind of new. And so I think the challenges that I had originally faced is that when you decide to enter this career field, there's a lot of bureaucracy, there's a lot of layers into what qualifies you as a chef versus a home cook or someone who likes to cook for fun or just moms who cook every day. You know, like I think our abuelas, like our grandparents, are the best cooks in the world, you know? And so only now does it have this fancy label and Michelin stars and all these things. And so I think the challenge is now, as you see in the industry, is that as we're starting to define the different careers that you could be, we aren't necessarily being compensated for the amount of work and effort it takes. And so being in a restaurant, you know, you're working crazy hours all the way from the early morning to late at night until 2 a.m. cleaning the kitchens and all these things. And if you want to get any sort of recognition, it's almost required to go to culinary school, which is incredibly expensive. And so you see this weird line of like I said, some of our culture has some of the best chefs, you know, just by nature, you know, growing up in a certain sort of household, you know, but you don't get that sort of payment recognition unless you have these, your chef whites, you know? And so you see a sort of small, actually fairly large division of privilege when it comes to being a chef and what that actually means, you know? And so I think that's where I struggle the most because it took me a while to kind of figure that out because I didn't really know what path I wanted to take, you know, so I could just become a cook and work for somebody. But to get any sort of, you know, to make a really good livelihood, you know, you have to be in the top rankings, you know. Challenging.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes when we're trying to follow a passion, because sometimes you don't need to monetize your passion, right? But your situation, this was something that you wanted to become your career. And I like the way that you worded it. Like, there were a lot of layers in the industry that you needed to work on. However, did you have any internal layers that you had to face first in order to go out to the world and fully become who you are right now?
Yes, I would say that especially with the times right now with coronavirus and this level of uncertainty, honestly, when that first happened, you know, with quarantine, the restaurants and the hospitality industry was the first to shut down. And so I unfortunately lost my job, you know, so we were very disposable in that sense because everything shut down and it's beyond my control, of course. But I was forced to recognize why I wanted to even become a chef because at first I was very upset, of course, because I saw hospitality as this field that would just never die because people always travel and are always looking for food. And so I found out that for me, it wasn't necessarily the restaurant aspect and the glitz and the glamour and monetary reasons. Yeah. Like you said, I realized like, sure, like that would be cool, of course, you know, but I don't need to be the next Gordon Ramsay, you know, like that just doesn't interest me at all. I found that the stories behind food and the reason why people came to restaurants to celebrate their birthdays and other milestones and celebrations, like seeing the joy of them eating the cake that I created, you know, like I'm a part of that memory to them. And I feel like every one of those moments and every time we gather around for a meal, we share it with loved ones. And I feel like unpacking that story is really important to me. And I find that education and food education around the world is important to me. And so I think that was the biggest thing I had to figure out on my own, because there was like this unspoken pressure that we tend to put on ourselves to become the greatest in our industry. And I realized that, you know, like Michelin stars are wonderful and they're a great milestone of achievement, but it's not necessarily something that I had wanted for myself. Yeah. And I had to learn to let that go.
Yeah, totally agree with that. And most of the time, this is because, like you said, this Michelin stars, like we're comparing ourselves. We're putting a review. So what are you, like 5 stars, 4 stars? What is it? So every single time we're comparing ourselves when we actually should be just following who we are and the things that we like to do. And truly, like, we always have a lot of people who we follow, who we look for inspiration, but we shouldn't mistake that for, oh, I want to become the next Ramsey, right? I should be myself with my own style, right? And that's what is going to stand me out of the, out of in this crowded industry, right?
So it's easier said than done, you know. It's very humbling. You have to let go of a lot of pride to be able to figure out your passion or your why in life, you know. Like, we could easily take a job with more money or move to a place that you think that will make us happier, but we really have to sit down and figure that out for ourselves, you know.
I love what you said, that you're doing this because you become part of people's experiences. Can you share any biggest experience that you were so proud of, that you make it make you really feel happy that you were part of that moment in other people's life?
The first thing that comes to mind is my college graduation. I knew that one of the biggest memories that I have relating to food is my family gathering around the table for Thanksgiving. And, you know, for Thanksgiving, you stay up really late the night before and creating dishes just so you can all sit around the table the next day and share on this huge feast. And so for me, like, for graduation, that was another moment where, like, everybody would come around the table and just, it's supposed to be a day that celebrates me, but I wanted it to be a day that celebrates, like, all the people who played a significant role in my life to get me to that milestone, you know. So that's my grandparents and my family and friends, and I wanted to honor them with a meal. And so I spent like a month creating like fancy menus, you know. They were just coming to my house, but I just made like little fancy menus, and I had like an 8-course meal and different, like, I had like a mini bar and all kinds of different things just for fun. And I don't know. It's like this feeling of like joy, you know, like it felt really humbling, and I don't know how to describe it. Just like awe, you know, that we could all sit around and just enjoy really great food, and they were appreciative and I was really happy. And I don't know. I think that's the feeling I try to pull from.
Wow. That's a really amazing feeling that I can sense from that, because you were not getting like something out of it in terms of money, right? It was more of a family thing, but you were getting a lot of it in terms of a personal growth, which is, I think, is really, really, really cool. So right now is, well, here in China is November 17th. Where are you actually?
I'm located in Dover, Delaware, the smallest state in the U.S.
Cool. So throughout the rest of the year, what are the goals that you want to accomplish before the year ends?
Honestly, so I am going to go to culinary school this upcoming January. And so my goals right now, as the time gets a little bit closer, is to get a lot of my paperwork in order. I'm actually studying in Barcelona. And so I need, like, thank you. So, you know, there's, with Corona, there's a lot of red tape. And so I have to go to New York City and go to the consulate and get a visa and all of the, you know, the check marks to make sure that I'm okay to fly over. So I guess that is my main goal for right now, to have a safe flight and to be able to make this transition as seamless as it can be. But I guess in retrospect, like for the upcoming year and my new adventure, I guess my goals are to be a little bit more adventurous, because sometimes I can be a little bit timid to experiencing new things. And I think this is a good opportunity for me to explore a little bit, you know, safely, of course, but, you know, to open up my, open up to learn everything that I can and just absorb as much as I can in the culinary world, I suppose.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool. I think Barcelona is a very nice city, a very balanced city, actually. Could you share, how did you set up this goal? Like, because you have been doing this chef thing as your primary set of income. Mm-hmm. And now you have decided to go to culinary school. So what make you decide to this goal? Has this something that has been a dream of yours for a while, or something you decided this year? How do you set up this goal?
So it's been a goal of mine for a really long time. I remember graduating high school. I just told everyone that I was going to go to college for the first 4 years. And then as soon as I'm done, I'm just going to go to culinary school, because my mindset was that I wanted the full college experience. And then also I wanted to learn the business side of restaurants and then learn the culinary side of restaurants, you know, that way I could open my own eventually. And I think that was a really great choice, because for college, I was on a sports scholarship. And so it didn't cost me too much money to attend school, fortunately, because of the track scholarships and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I did get that full experience as I had planned. And now it also gave me time to kind of develop what exactly I wanted to do with my culinary degree. Because originally I did just want to do baking, and I think it was college that really encouraged me to do both. Oh, okay. And so I think I'm just, I have like a long, long-term of goals, and I think that this is just another milestone to help me get there.
Nice, nice. I like that. Yeah. I was reading through your blog, and well, first of all, it's quite nice. It's quite nice, very creative. So congrats for that. Yeah, I like that. And I read here that you recently read The War of Art. Well, mm-hmm. I think it's quite incredible. What was the thing that you learned the most out of it that you have applied into your life?
Yeah, that book is honestly so good. And I think it just spoke to me, but I think it could speak to literally anyone. It's basically a book about, it calls it the resistance, but basically it's that procrastination that we all feel for things that we need to do or want to do, but we push off to the next day or the next day, or whether that be working out or writing or starting that project that we've always dreamed of. It's just a very solid reminder that, you know, sometimes when we face that and question, like, hey, you know, if this is our dream, why are we holding it off till tomorrow? Like, why don't we do it today? Or why do we always put something else in place of what we're supposed to be doing? And I thought that was a really honest question that we kind of have to ask ourselves, like, should we be watching Netflix or should we be working? You know what I mean? So it forces you to think about that. And basically it's saying that that is always going to be there. Like, there's always going to be something that comes up. There's always going to be an opportunity to hang out with friends or go out or do whatever you want. And that's great. But deep down, you'll always feel that dissatisfaction, because that's not your purpose and that's not your dream. You know, you're, when you don't take each step and each day to fulfill your dream, it's like a day wasted, you know? Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the main takeaway that I took away from it, because I think I do feel that, you know, I feel that resistance, everybody does. And sometimes it can be deeper rooted with fear, and sometimes they are justified. You may have gone through something, or you may have done something that inhibited you. But as long as we feed those excuses and as long as we just give up on that, we'll turn to other vices, whether that be partying or whatever it may be. We each have our own sort of thing, you know, social media, scrolling each day, you know? Mm-hmm. So like we can always find things to fill our time. It's just, I don't know, you should take the time to move toward what actually like fulfills you, what brings you joy, you know? And yeah, so that was a really good book. I recommend that to anybody. It's quick too. I think I finished it in 2 days. It's really short.
I think that what you said, I really resonate with it, with that, because I think that we put limits into ourselves, right? We might have vision boards, we might have our goals written down and everything, and we are very motivated and everything. But as soon as we are not in that motivated space, then we are, like you said, procrastinating, right? And instead of like following the things that we are planned or following the thing that our goals, we, I don't know, tend to go out to something else, knowing deep inside that we should be doing the thing that we love, the thing that we liked. So when we, when you were deciding to go into culinary school, did you have any fear that was holding you up to make this decision?
Of course, you know, like, this is my first time traveling abroad. Granted, I'm a military child, so I'm used to moving around the United States, but this is my first international flight. So that alone is just like, oh my gosh, that's so many hours. Yeah. It's a little bit nervous, you know, and of course there are fears that people put inside of you, you know, like I'm a female going by myself to travel the world, you know, there's all of these fears and I'm afraid that, you know, that I'll fail and all these different things. But the thing that I'm learning and the more that I learn and read is that from experts and people who have succeeded in their careers is that the fear will always be there and it'll never go away, but you get to decide how much it rules in your life. So you can make decisions based on that and be miserable and wonder what if you did that thing, or you can just face it head on and go through the smoke and mirrors, and it could be bad, but it could also be the most rewarding thing in your life, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that's how I take it, you know, like anytime I'm afraid or I feel fear for something, chances are it's the thing you're supposed to do, because chasing your dreams is very scary. It's risky. You're taking a risk, you know? And so if you feel that pull, then chances are you're supposed to at least try it out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what's the worst that could possibly happen? You know, you fail and you learn something and you try again.
Yeah. And there's always going to be people telling us from their point of view why we should do it or why we shouldn't do it. And I call this actually like the culture of should, right? People are always saying, you should do this, you should be, you shouldn't be doing that, right? But there is an inner voice that tells us, okay, this feels right. I should be following this, right? I feel like we should be following our own shoots, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Because nobody will know better than you. Despite you can get all the advice from the world, but you will only know what's best for you. And it may not, people may not understand, but it'll make sense to you. And I think that's what really matters, because you have to live with it, you know. They don't have to live with the decisions that they decide, you know.
And speaking of this, like, influence from people, how do you manage critics when you make a dish or you, when you bake something and I don't know, somebody doesn't like it that much? Have you ever got any bad critics?
Of course, you know, like, but the thing is though, like, when it comes to criticism, you have to you have to be mindful of who it is, you know what I mean? So if my head chef is telling me something and instructing me this way and saying like, hey, this is too salty, hey, this is too flat for baking, you know, whatever it may be, then I value their opinion and I want to be where they're at and I want to learn. So I take it with a grain of salt and I adjust and I make it better. However, if it's just a friend or some, you know what I mean? If it's just somebody who just taste and they're like, oh, I don't think this is right. But, you know, they kind of don't know what they're talking about. You just kind of have to nod and smile and understand that everybody has different tastes or whatever it may be. But you could also take it seriously. It just really depends on who is speaking, you know, and I don't think you should take everything head on.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree with that. Well, Precious, thank you so much for your time. And I really congratulate you for your next experience. I wish you the best in Barcelona. It's a very fun city. I have been there for vacations only, but I had a great time there. So I wish you the best. And I really appreciate your time with me on this podcast.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I wish you the best as well.
All right, Precious. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.